Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my radio listeners. This is Getting It Right with Dr. Velva Bowles. It has been a while since I've had a chance to interact with you, and I hope all of you are doing well. Today's topic, if you were able to look ahead, is achieving healthy living in modern times. This topic is very near and dear to my heart, and I've covered it more than once in my broadcasts, but recently it has come back to my attention. I'm teaching a course. It's called Human Biology and Nutrition, and interacting with the students, I'm made aware of just how much is not known about what we're eating in these modern times. And you may ask, what does that mean? Part of the teaching curriculum includes learning how to read what's called nutrition facts on products that are sold in grocery stores. And much to the alarm of members of my class, and it offered a very fresh and reminder to me of how we've become so dependent on commercial prepackaged processed food that we have been lulled asleep, not knowing what we're eating and eating it anyway. When the farmers went out to the garden and pulled something out of the soil, they knew they planted it. They knew what the soil content was because they usually use their enrichments, and the food was understood. What I've rediscovered and presented in my classroom setting and reviewed in a number of videos that are now posted on YouTube, if you want to go on your own excursion and listen to what a number of awakened persons are saying, supermarkets are acting as the major commercial marketing businessmen. They're selling, as I once remember hearing in a sales course I took, they're selling the sizzle and not the steak. Because, quite frankly, there is no steak. When we're eating all kinds of snacks with scientific research having told the manufacturer how to make this snack so irresistible, one can almost say it becomes an addiction. There's scientific study on and how the brain responds to the crunching and how the crunch is resounding through the jawbone and so forth. The taste, all types of research being done on how to add flavors and sensations that trigger the brain to want more, that it's no longer food as the primary, but the sensation becomes primary. When one looks at all of this research and activity, it becomes clear that food in itself is no longer the focus. It's really finance and addiction. And no one seems to be slowing this fast-moving freight train, and they're waiting for it to derail. And that analogy comes to mind on the heels of the recent crash of the Amtrak train, and the results are, it was traveling at 104 miles an hour or something near that speed and was unable to negotiate a turn, and the consequence, of course, was derailing. Well, I fear that we are on such a fast-moving train that's bound to be derailed. One of the things we see, and I've talked about and written a book about, is obesity. And there are many people looking at it, that we are the most obese people in the world, that children's weight has just become out of control, and it's an inverted pyramid. The poorer the person, the fatter they are. And this suggests that what is being eaten or what can be afforded to be consumed in America is no longer nutritious food, but empty calories and, unfortunately, imitation sensations, such that the more of this unhealthy food you eat, the more you want. To me, this is quite like the addictions to marijuana or methamphetamine or crack cocaine or any of the opioids that are illegal and one can be imprisoned. And it leads me to ask, how can grocery stores practice the same thing that tobacco company practice, which is the same thing that is in, is believed to be illicit drug trafficking practices, and we go along with it? It's almost as if we are blinded to the analogy, we're blinded to the similarities. The outcry a couple of summers ago when in New York, one of the officials wanted to ban the biggie size, I don't know exactly the ounces of the sweetened drink, perhaps it was 42 ounces or 32, I don't remember, but the whole concept was there was no reason to have such a large volume of a sweetened drink available to someone who may not have the cognitive ability to understand exactly the damage potential of such a large sweetened drink. And you may stop and say, oh, this sounds like too much to do about nothing. Well, I've worked in the clinical setting for some time, and I can testify that what we call healthy foods, the fresh vegetables, the fruit, all kinds of things we say you should eat for a balanced diet, is well outside of the reach of many Americans, particularly in Louisiana, South Carolina, Missouri, in the areas where I have practiced medicine, that you can get a hamburger or a sausage biscuit cheaper than you can get an apple. There's something wrong with that. We are talking about enjoying good health and having a high standard of living. Then how can we allow garbage to be mass-produced, marketed, and pushed onto the people? The silence is deafening. It is so much like the cigarette companies who were allowed to put packages of cigarettes into the rations of our military and then turn around and not understand why were there so many lung cancer and addicted persons to this particular product. There are laws in place to protect the hamburgers industries. There's laws in place to protect the dairy industries who are doing things that if we had full acknowledgement, we would not accept. The whole concept of giving cows a growth hormone injection to maximize production of milk, and this resulting in enormous udders that then result in mastitis, which then results in infection in our milk, which results in antibiotics being given to the cows to prevent the infection in the udder, and it's all being passed on into the consumer. And the consumer has no knowledge that it is considered legal not to tell the consumer that the milk you are buying may have a higher than your accepted limits for infectious agents and or antibiotic agents. There are meat industry standards that allow something called meat glue to be mixed with smaller and inferior cuts of meat to produce what appears to be large quality pieces of meat. And that in itself, I mean, that's bad enough. But I say, okay, so you took some scraps and you made them into a big piece of meat. The problem arises if you unknowingly think you have this rich cut of, let's just say, T-bone steak, and you like yours real medium rare, and you put it on the grill for a short period of time. What you didn't know is the outside edges of the smaller pieces of meat may have an opportunity to have been exposed to bacteria, and you're cooking it at a medium rare would allow that bacteria to survive. If it were a single cut of meat, the likelihood of the density of bacteria is lower than if you take scraps of meat and assemble it into a single piece. So knowledge isn't just power. Knowledge might be your health. It might be the difference between being ill with E. coli, or in the case of any kind of chicken or fowl, you made with salmonella. And if you have no way to defend yourself, that makes you a victim by design. And any time a powerful agent can create a situation where there are many victims and who be vulnerable or very liable, I call that bullying. That is anarchy, that there shouldn't be a situation where I did not have informed consent. I did not have opportunity to express yes or no as far as do I want this to go into my body? Do I want to feed this to my children? But yet it's happening every day. What I put before you in the marquee was a positive spin, and what I've been ranting on a bit seems a bit negative. But healthy living starts with our mindset, that you can't make good decisions if you don't have all the information. And I guess that's the stimulus for the oration I gave you just now, that first of all, you need to understand your environment and as best as possible be in control of your environment. Environment where you work and where you eat, where you sleep, where you relax, it all affects your health. And this came out again discussed in my classroom last night, that if you are uncomfortable, stressful, you're in a hostile environment, or let's take something very simple, that it's colder than you're comfortable in, and you wear a sweater and you're bundled and you're sniffing, you're not going to be able to concentrate or even perform your best than if you were in a comfortable environment where you were not feeling physically inconvenient. What's also true, if you're in a chair that doesn't rise or lower to accommodate what you're supposed to do, and the strain on your neck, your shoulders, your back, your eyes can also distract, although it may be a subconscious distraction. If you find that after a while you're anxious or you're nervous or you just very much want to move on to something else, you need to start investigating your environment. If you're at home and you don't have a comfortable spot, when I say that, I smile because when I grew up, as it should be, I suspect, in many homes, there was a recliner that was presented to my father somewhere for Father's Day, and I think even my mother may have purchased it for him. It was Daddy's chair, and if you were sitting in the chair and he came in, you immediately got moved to give way to him sitting in his chair. And it was kind of a joke because everyone knew it. It was didn't matter who you were. Even if there was a visitor who was seated there, they gave way to my father when he came in to claim what was his. What I'm saying here is he had a space, and everyone acknowledged and understood that space. What I'm putting out to you, you too should have a space. There should be somewhere in your home where everyone acknowledges, recognizes, and gives way to your presence. I had a conversation with my sister probably a month or more or so, and I was talking to her that when she had first built a house, she and her husband, and I went to visit, I looked around, and all of the decor accommodated his taste. And I asked her, what is yours? Where are you to be? I wasn't trying to be difficult or create a problem, but it was obvious to me that there was no touch that said, here's my space, this is where I belong, this is how I'm comfortable. And even in my own house, I'm now at a point where I'm evaluating where I spend most of my time. And it has, and where you spend most of your time changes with time. And when you look around and you're sitting in a chair and it doesn't support you the way you like, or there's no footrest that allows you to put your feet like you like, or you have music but it cannot accommodate to the sound quality you like, that's when you start to say, I need to adjust my environment so that I am more comfortable. That's not to say you need to be conceited or entitled, but certainly there should be somewhere you can call your own. I can remember a time when I was under a whole lot more stress than I am, and I'm glad I'm no longer in that situation. But I would say to my mind, I'm trying to find somewhere to be. And I had that sense of I don't have somewhere to be. And I had discussed this with someone in a casual manner, and they mentioned, you remember the television show Cheers and how you walk through the door and the song says, everybody knew your name? I think inside all of us crave that. We want to have someone who's familiar. You want someone to know that you like to have your drink shaken and not stirred, or you take the olive and not the onion, or you want someone to pluff a pillow when you come in the room or say hello and call your name. That's the natural social element of man. We have that need for camaraderie and we have that need to have another person say, I missed you, I'm glad you're here, or I need you. And when we don't have that, we are not in our most healthy environment. And if you unfortunately are living in a circumstance where the opposite is true, that nothing is yours and everything is a quarrel and a fight, you're in a situation that invites disease and dis-ease because the body cannot relax if you're always tense with epinephrine and adrenaline being secreted, cortisol being secreted. You're in a flight or fight mode. You're not going to have the best health situation. And when you do have these hormones like cortisone and adrenaline that are responsive to being angry or aggravated, shamed or disrespected, the hormones adversely attacks your heart. The pain in the chest, when they say it had chest pain and it's called angina. You can have stomach pain, it's usually an ulcer, you can create ulcers, and you can have nervous system problems such as depression or anxiety. And all of this is from a secretion or hormone secretion that's responding to an adverse environment. Theoretically, if you understand your situation and you really want to change it, it may not be immediate, it may not be the most rapid, but certainly if you want to have longevity to your life and you want to have a quality of life that is promised to us just being humans on earth, then you want to alter what can make what is now adverse something wonderful. It can be as simple perhaps as buying a comfortable chair and placing it in a place that is unique to you, or painting a room a color that satisfies you, or finding music that allow you to mentally go where no one else can join you. But look for ways to create that environment that de-stresses and develop a very comfortable sense. So when you're wanting to maintain good health, you have to learn how to cope with stressful situations. Sometimes we can't immediately escape, and we may not have a lot of personal time. Then, for me, I turn inward, and I think of meditation. Now, meditation means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and I've certainly tried different kinds of meditation. Sometimes meditation is as simple as a pen and paper, and you focus on something, and you write about it. You just write it down. I want to have a more beautiful house. I want my house to be painted a bright gray color. I want a new car. I want my car to have this kind of quality. If you have no one to share the information, and that's the social element creeping back in, then perhaps you create that sharing with yourself. And it's referred to, if you go to a counselor, they will say that is journaling. I remember as a child, my father used to write little notes, and they would be left on the kitchen table beside his dinner plate, and I'd pick them up and read them sometimes. And I never quite understood why he was writing them, to whom he was addressing. And now that I've gotten older, I realize just the marvelousness of that whole thing, that he was making something that was an idea more concrete. He was taking something that he had not yet achieved and making it more materialistic. And if you follow law of attraction, or you're into the metaphysical concept of you first think it and then you make it happen, he was following those tenets. And I don't know if he ever studied that, but I do remember reading where he would make a projection. He would say something about not having the finance yet, but when he did, this is what he would do, and what he expected of his children and how he expected this to be. And I marvel at his doing that, and wish I had the knowledge I have now to have discussed it better, or been a better student of what he was practicing when he was practicing it. So if you can't immediately alter your condition, you can meditate. You can create your virtual escape. And you can do other little things besides meditation. You can exercise. I was talking to a fellow who had been incarcerated unjustly and spent 15 years in prison before he was found innocent, that it had been a major injustice. the young man, if you are aware of the Central Park Five, they were young teenagers, I think the youngest was 15, and they were found guilty of raping someone, and all five went to prison, and 15 years later, it was uncovered that they were innocent, that the lady who was raped, they were able to identify the person who had raped her, and these five young men had spent all this time behind bars. And I spoke to one of the young men who is now a motivational speaker, and what he told me is when he first went in, it was just disbelief. He couldn't stand him because the interviewing officers had told him that he might as well confess so he can go home. And he thought that was the way for him to go home, not knowing that was the way for him not to go home for the he was in prison as long as he had been alive. He was 15 years old and was arrested, and 15 years later, he was found innocent of all crimes. He said that when he first came to understand what really was his reality, he couldn't face it. And the things that got him to be able to transition and endure was a meditation, an inner sense of a reality, how he escaped to what was within him. And he did meditation and he did exercise, and he had to keep his mind focused on the future and not the present, because the present was too horrible. And I think about that sometimes, how we succumb to minor injustices and we succumb to minor setbacks in such a way that everything just stops. The world comes to an end, and we have to refocus and get back in. And there are those who have these horrendous travesties, can endure. And when they share how they endure, they essentially do what I'm recommending. You meditate. You get outside of the circumstance. You exercise. Even if all you can do is in a small space, run in place, or side saddle hop, or some kind of exercise to let the muscles tense and relax, relieving some of what hormones can cause, because you can be very much tense when you have a lot of adrenaline or cortisol. Some people go for runs. Some people go into a gym and box. Some go swimming. Whatever it is, you need to identify and find that release within the circumstances that you have. Certainly, one of the most helpful is having supportive friends. And I keep coming back to that social element. I found myself and find myself more isolated than I ever expected I would be. By being a professional and in business more or less alone and being the CEO or in charge, I kept moving away from group dynamics. I suspect that the whole concept, well, I would even say I know, that the whole concept of marriage and children and family is a way one can ensure having a tribe or having a social group that understands you, that interacts with you. And I didn't really grasp this until, I guess, the last 5 or 10 years, that you really have to create what it is you're going to have in your older age. And if you don't come upon this understanding, or your family didn't share this with you when you were in that formative age at 20 and 30, it becomes progressively more difficult to acquire those things as you get older, because you're mingling with like persons when you're in high school, you're mingling with like persons when you're in undergrad or college, and as things become more specialized, you tend to move into a less dense population. In my case, the whole consideration in the United States, when we talk about black and white and just the racial dynamics, as I moved out of the homogeneous area of black American interactions into what was the integrated dynamics, I was really becoming more and more and more isolated with time. So you want to try not to become isolated. You want to have supportive friends. You want to have supportive family. You want to, if you don't have that immediately from any kind of design, such as marriage or a sorority or fraternity, you want to volunteer. You want to join things. You want to go to your art museums. You want to go to your music consortiums and see if you can't identify, because we need to be part of a group. We need to have an identity. if you don't see yourself volunteering, perhaps you turn to church, whatever is your religious interest. You may want to go and get active in a church. You may want to lead a youth group. You may want to do a retreat. But you need to do something to re-identify your social self. That is very important for our balance. If we are loners and we are reclusives, over time, there's a loss of humanity. And we want to protect that and we want to grow it. When you have family, husband, children, grandchildren, and so forth, you're always in that circle, and you have the reflection. You have someone who says, wait a minute, that's not what we do, or that's not how it's done, or why are you acting strangely? So you have this reflective model that's currently or constantly present, and that is a healthy thing to have. You definitely do not want to stray so far from what is the social dynamics that you lose your humanness. I had a conversation with someone I met just recently, and her comment made me smile, but I was very aware of what she meant. We were at a street fair, and I hadn't been in a sidewalk art kind of walk sidewalk in a long time, and obviously she had been, for reasons she didn't explain, a bit reclusive for some time prior to this art walk. And she said to me, "Is the what I have on, is it okay?" And I thought that was an odd for a mature woman to ask. And I said, "Yeah, as far as I can tell." She says, "Well, when you get used to not going anywhere, you dress and look like you're not going anywhere. And I'm not sure if what I have on is appropriate for going somewhere." Now, that was rather convoluted, and perhaps if you are always dynamic, going to work, meeting friends after work, that it even has no meaning. But if you are at home a lot and you don't see people, say, three or four times a week at best, and what you have on doesn't have to be fashionable, what you have on doesn't even have to match, you may get to a point where it doesn't even have to fit that well, you will find things that then go to so well in a public eye. And then you wear that same outfit, costume, clothing, and you're in a department store and you suddenly realize I have on stripes and plaids and these colors don't match and I have no jewelry on and I certainly did not put any makeup. And you start to scrutinize with new eyes because you are looking around and what you look like will certainly be reflected in the reaction of people around you. And this, by definition, folks, is really society. And unfortunately, some young people, when we talk about children and peer pressure, they get too caught up with what someone thinks of them, and they can go overboard. But we all are susceptible and should be aware of how we are fitting in that society and how well we are adopting and adapting. So to maintain good health includes a good social dynamic, a good mental dynamic, a good environment. And if you're not able to make massive changes in your lifestyle, take the small steps, do meditation, do some exercise, find a place that's yours where you feel comfortable, take that hot bath and soak. Go fishing on a lake, go sit and stare at the water, do a yoga class, get a mat and sit in a quiet place. But whatever you do, you want to adapt your situation to your needs. Don't be there suffering. Don't eat what isn't food because someone else is saying you should have it. Learn what your body needs. Identify with your best self. And achieve a healthy living in these modern times. So, with that, I thank you so much for listening. And I look forward to the next time we can get together. And until then, take care.